Kamenetsky Brothers Land of Lakers podcast. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, coming to you on Tuesday afternoon as the Lakers begin their first extended road trip, I would say, Andy, of the season.
Yeah, Golden State, while a formidable opponent, and that in and of itself is a real challenge, the actual road trip itself, you're just going up the five. It's really not a big deal, and they don't even drive. That's like a 45-minute flight?
Something like that. And I remember I did Time Warner the night after that game, and there were a lot of guys talking about, and I get it to some degree, I do get it a little bit, but they were talking about, you know, fatigue and, you know, getting up, and it's a second night of a back-to-back and all this stuff, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I know it's hard to play on the road, but it ain't that hard. I mean, nobody played in that opener. Nobody played more than like 26 minutes, and they took like a 20-minute flight, like you said. And so, I mean, I know they were absolutely keyed up and emotionally and all that, but physically tight. Didn't we spend all summer, Andy, talking about how much younger and more athletic they are?
No,
and everybody's worn out from playing 20 minutes in the first game.
No, they got their asses kicked in that game because the Warriors, at least at present, are a hell of a lot better than them. It was not because of road weariness that they lost this game.
Again, I can buy the emotional aspect of it, but the rest of it, I was not buying what the Lakers, and I believe Geeter that night was selling. But sometimes you just got to bring it. As our old friend Marcellus Wiley would say, you got to go 100. Means 100%.
That was terrible.
Means 100%.
No, they mean 100% truthful.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. You made it sound like go 100%, like, you know, not fake it while you're on the set.
No, I got to be real. People will look at me and they'll know I'm not being real.
Mm-hmm. Like when you went 100. That, for example, fake as hell.
I have a great deal of street cred that requires constant defense. I'm like the state of Israel. You know, I always have to be aware.
You do not have the street cred, Brian, of the mayor of Toronto.
No, that guy keeps it real. and this is really not to get too sidetracked on Canadian politics, but if you haven't heard Rob Ford, I mean, even most Americans have heard about this story, you know, the crack smoking mayor of Toronto, who, and I think this is a brilliant defense, said, yes, I smoked crack, but it was only because I was so drunk that I really didn't know what I was doing. That's actually a great defense for being a
crack
smoker.
What do you want from me, man? I was in a drunken stupor.
Right. I mean, I can't be held responsible for smoking crack while I'm drunk.
What was great, too, is we got I sent out a link to Rob Ford's confession of smoking crack and also taking the media to task. Because before, when he denied having smoked crack, he said the problem wasn't that he was lying. They were asking the wrong question. They were phrasing the question as if to say, do you continually smoke crack? When he was saying, no, I don't continually do it. This is not a regular thing. I've only done it once.
Right.
You should have asked the right way. I wasn't lying.
When did you stop beating your wife? It's not that I stopped beating her on October 12th.
Right.
That's
exactly
when I stopped.
But I tweeted out a link to this saying that Rob Ford is like a car that never stops crashing. And one of our tweeps, who is from Toronto, responded saying that you guys know about Rob Ford. It's like, dude, your mayor smokes crack. That is a news story that is going to get beyond Canada. He seemed shocked that people in the States had heard this story about Rob Ford.
Well, no, I mean, in fairness, I think he's used to the sort of normal American news template where, like, if, you know, some sort of serious policy thing like happened, you know, like, you know, we're having the big Obamacare debate right now, Andy, in the United States, perhaps you've heard.
Yeah.
Some big thing going on like that.
I watch the same news, Brian, that delivers information about Rob Ford.
Canada gets a new prime minister, that kind of thing.
No
American's going to know that. That's not the kind of thing we're interested in.
Yeah, Canada in civil war. We would not hear about this.
We might know that. Zombie attack, we would know.
Well, because it could affect us.
Well, we like zombies.
Right, exactly.
The ratings for Walking Dead prove we love zombies. So,
mayor of biggest city in country smoking crack?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that news is going to travel south.
That's
and
like,
by the way,
that's like crack around, for Americans. We love that
probably around
stuff.
The world.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah.
Good luck to him.
Good luck to him. Good luck to the Raptors. Anyway, so lots coming up in today's episode of the Land O'Lakers podcast. We're going to get into lots of stuff about the, I think it's actually fair to call it a positive 2-2 start.
Sure.
I think most people would take 2-2 at this point. We'll get into how well the Lakers are playing. We'll get into whether or not the chemistry issues, Andy, that were so ballyhooed during training camp are actually just hooed at this point. There's some problems on the early problems with the question of this great team chemistry. We'll get into some stuff I wrote about over the weekend with Steve Nash. And, of course, Ask a Kamenetsky. So all that coming up in today's show, all of that, Andy, and more, but not until we crank through today's headlines. All right, Andy, we saw a blurb from Mark Stein. If you haven't seen it on ESPN.com, I'm not sure actually this was part of it, but Mark Stein has a new blog.
So yep, it's called
Steinline Live, and this is actually a post from it. Among his 8 bold predictions for the 2013-2014 NBA season is that Lamar Odom will be back playing in the league by the end of the season. 34 years old, has, like Rob Ford, had a busy offseason.
Speculated for some of the same reasons.
That was not the nicest thing I've ever said, but it was kind of funny.
Once it was out there, I had to spell it out.
I mean, I feel bad because I like Lamar, but it was low-hanging fruit, and I think you would have done the same thing. Andy, do you believe...
I did do the same thing.
Do you think Lamar Odom will be an NBA player by the end of the season?
I hope that I'm wrong, because like you, I think the world of Lamar is one of my favorite athletes I've ever been around, one of the favorite guys that I've covered, and I think he is a genuinely great guy. But I think there's going to be... need to be a lot of evidence that these issues are far, far behind him, because this was a very, very bad offseason for Lamar. And while he's coming off, I think, a somewhat underrated season with the Clippers, in that his defense and rebounding were actually quite good. He was a big reason why the second unit was often better defensively than the starters.
Sure.
In that sense, he was sort of underrated. Statistically, he has dropped a lot. And Lamar also is, to put it kindly, not a guy easy to envision keeping in shape
without the
help of NBA coaches
to get there, I think,
and
that's
training staff in his ear.
Yeah, I think that's a bigger issue than any of the other stuff with, the drug rumors and all these other things. Because ultimately, the commitment that somebody's going to make to him is so short that, honestly, and this is professional sports. I think if he ran off after the season and got into more trouble, they wouldn't care. It's like, can you show up and be in shape and play for us for 2-3 months? And I actually, like you, I worry the answer is no. He had a couple more guys on that list. I want you to give me just a yes or no for each. 3 guys who will also be in the league by the end of the year. Baron Davis.
No.
Steven Jackson.
No.
Jason Collins.
Yes.
I agree about all 3 of those. I do think somebody will pick up Jason Collins by the end of the year.
Andrew Bynum, Brian, returned to the court for the Cavs faster than many people expected. Certainly you and I. He actually suited up for their opener and has since played in 3 of 4 games, averaging 6 points, a little over 3 rebounds, 1.5 blocks or so, in about 12 minutes a game. In theory, so far so good, except perhaps not. The Cleveland Plain Dealer is reporting that Drew is experiencing, quote, little sharp pains in those legs. He said that the pain is, quote, nothing too bad, but also admitted that his explosiveness may never return. And moving forward, he may have to rely more on technique and footwork than athleticism. Looking ahead, Brian, what type of player do you think Drew is going to be?
I think he's a 20-minute-a-night guy. I think if you want to have him useful for an entire season, you almost, the Clippers are literally going to keep Antoine Jameson in bubble wrap until, April, basically. They're just, Doc Rivers has already said, you're not going to play much until the end of the year when we want your veteran leadership. We want a little more scoring out of that position. Yeah, I think, Bynum's obviously not something that extreme, but the idea that he's going to become a 32-minute a night, 34, 35, play starters minutes again in the league, I just don't see how it happens. I mean, he's just coming back, but he's already got pain. Everything, by every report, every doctor's diagnosis, whatever it is, what he's got appears to be very chronic. And if you want him and you want him to be available, I think he's a 20-minute-a-night guy, an occasional spot starter, somebody you can put in. Still can be an effective player, but this idea that he could be the second-best center behind Dwight Howard thing, like he was when all that trade stuff was going down before the injuries, that's gone forever, I think.
Russell Westbrook, Brian, returned to the court after tearing his meniscus in last year's playoffs and having an unexpected offseason surgery ahead of schedule. Third game of the year against Phoenix, part of a 103-96 win for OKC. 21 points and 5 of 16 shooting. Got to the free throw line 14 times, 4 rebounds, 7 assists, 4 turnovers, and a steal. Huge, huge, huge for the Thunder to get him back this early.
I think most of the reports, he would return in like a month or something that, and he played in the third game. I mean, this really does, Andy, like you say, change the entire complexion of the Western Conference race. I know I had picked the Clippers to earn that number one seed, in part because I thought the Thunder would be playing without Westbrook for the first month of the season. That would be enough to get the Clips far enough along that they could get that top seed. Now, obviously, the Thunder are right back in the mix, assuming that Westbrook doesn't have any setbacks. So, I mean, this is sea-changing type information, a type recovery in the Western Conference.
No question.
Final news story, Andy. Kobe Bryant once again goes to his giant meat locker, slices off a bloody piece of red flesh and throws it to the masses. He has once again changed his Twitter avatar. It is now all black. None blacker, Andy. And he tweeted out #blackout, #bear hunt. Andy, my question to you, what does that mean?
Oh. Either Kobe is now about to, I think most people are assuming Kobe is about to either ratchet up his training, get to that point where, remember, he said he needs to go about 3 weeks really hard, really explosive workouts before he can feel comfortable taking the court again and actually suiting up for the Lakers, or he's found a new hobby in bear hunting.
And apparently do at night.
Well, look, if you're going to be hunting, you need to not necessarily be blacked out. People tend to wear camouflage, I guess, unless he's going to go bear hunting with a bunch of Navy SEALs, which would be unusual. But Kobe, look, Kobe believes in going hard or going home. He's gonna hunt bears with the best of the best. I don't understand the bear hunt part, to be honest. Doesn't make it clear. What it really means is that Kobe is just tossing out red meat to the fans who absolutely love stuff.
They're like Walking Dead people. That was my impression of Walking Dead people. All right, so those are your headlines. Moving on to actual news, Andy. We mentioned it before. The Lakers off to a 2-2 start, heading into Tuesday evening's game against the Mavericks, which, of course, by the time most of you hear this, will already be over. So they'll either be 2-2 or 2-3 or 3-2. But either way, Andy, what has stood out to you as the most positive, negative, surprise, predictable, whatever? Give me your rundown, Andy, of what we've seen thus far for the Lakers.
The most surprising thing I've seen from this team, the positives, as we said early on, is that, they're keeping about a 500 pace so far until Kobe eventually. Right. But I don't know where they're going to be by the time people hear this. So it's about a 500 pace one way or the other. They're playing with a lot of energy. They're playing with a lot of heart. I think this team could be described as a scrappy, plucky bunch. And that's something that's actually pretty fun for fans to watch, win or lose, and it's something that I think is easy for them to rally behind. The biggest surprise to me that's been a standout, because it's actually helped them play pretty well, Jody Meeks with this sudden ability to take the ball to the basket.
Yes.
At least, the
San Antonio game, he tried it. That turned out to be a bad idea. But generally speaking, he's had far more success putting the ball on the floor this year than last.
Well, by more, you mean any. Because last year, Jody Meeks taking the ball to the basket was nothing short of a train wreck. I mean, it was like when Meta used to spot up to take a three and you could hear the entire Staples Center going, no! That was Jody when he would put the ball on the floor.
I was about to say just dribbling was a bad idea for Jody.
Jody dribbling was a disaster. And this part of his game has been a really unexpected element that's helped make this bench that I think has probably outperformed expectations that much better.
Yeah, and you know, Meeks, who I thought would play his way out of the rotation, has been very good. Henry, who I didn't think would make the team, is their leading scorer.
And Wesley Johnson, who you said was an awful pickup.
Right. Well, just not awful, just useless.
Oh, my bad. I don't want to paint this in a way you didn't mean it, Brian.
Please don't mischaracterize my point here, Andy. Johnson has struggled, I think, offensively. He's not shot the ball well. But, you know, this attempt to make him into a defender who can play on the wing, who can defend fours in a small lineup, he's shown signs. You know, the way he defended Kawhi Leonard at moments in the San Antonio game, I thought, for example, was really impressive. And, you know, he does certain things. I was talking about this with Kurt Rambis at practice on Monday. It's, you know, it's as cliche as it is, there are little things that he does, the way he cuts, the way he makes the proper pass and all these other things and rotates the right way. And sometimes he does it right, sometimes he does it wrong, but where you, for all the praise, and we know we're used to coaches heaping praise on players because that's generally what they do. You're like, oh, okay, I see what they're getting at. And, you know, I asked a scout who I was sitting next to at the San Antonio game, how good a player he thinks Johnson is. He's like, you know what? He's still got a chance. So, you know, he's a really nice kid. I'd like him to do well. And maybe they're finding a niche for him. But the bottom line here, Andy, is my preseason predictions this year were absolute garbage. Almost all of them, as far as I can tell.
Elias Harris would appreciate if you would say that you don't think that they're going to end up honoring his contract through the entire season. That could be a real pick-me-up for him.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I'm in. I'm going to start spending that money. It's hard to complain at where they are, 2-2, and you know, they're not good. They're not a really good team. They're not talented. They don't have, you know, as much as I'm impressed by what Henry is doing, and I had, you know, another really interesting conversation with Kurt about him. The bottom line of that being he's 22 and a really coachable kid. That's sort of what we're getting at. But, you know, D'Antoni said after the San Antonio game that one of the things that hurt them was losing Henry for that, you know, that moment, and, you know, he got the cut on his head and all that. And that, you know, left him without their leading scorer. You know, he's put in, and I was like, think about that for a second. I mean, good for him for exceeding expectations, for proving people like me wrong, even on the sense that he'd make the team and all that. That sentence should never come out of the mouth of a coach on a team with real talent and aspirations. Like, my God, we just lost our leading scorer, Xavier Henry.
Right, unless the coach happened to be the guy at Kansas.
Right, no, then I guess
in which
okay.
case that would be a big deal.
Or wherever Xavier Henry went to high school. But, you know, they've looked better than, you know, I think in moments that I thought they'd been competitive in three of the four games. You know, Sean Williams hasn't really impressed. You know, they have a lot of guys who play well every second or third day, which is what you'd expect. But at the very least, they're fun to watch. They're trying hard defensively for right now, and you know, it's not a bad product. I will say that it is not a bad product. It is not miserable to turn on Laker games like some of us were worried that it might be.
It seems like so far, if nothing else, they're pretty determined to make the most of what they have in front of them, and that's a pretty admirable quality.
Well, funny you should mention that, Andy, because as they were leaving town, there are already some grumblings because I think, you know, the proverbial Laker Nation, Andy, has been upset that Jordan Hill has not played a lot of minutes over the course of the four games. He hasn't played the 25, 26 minutes that I think most people would like to see him on, because he is, to say the least, an offensive rebounding dynamo.
Oh, yeah.
While he plays. I mean, he's up around, I read Silver Screen and Roll had this up earlier today, that his offensive rebounding percentage, which has always been sort of historically high, is up around 30%, which is just bananas. But he's not getting more than, you know, 15, 16 minutes a night because D'Antoni's playing Kamen, he's playing Wes Johnson, he's doing all these things, tinkering with the lineup, and there are
Sean Williams,
right.
Pau Gasol, obviously.
There are some grumblings already about guys and their role, and Pau has said some stuff, and Kamen has said some stuff, and Hill has, while not trying not to be too forward about it, is, you know, obviously wants to play more. It makes me wonder, like I mentioned before, whether or not this chemistry thing, this incredible chemistry that we all talked about, and how much better off they are and everybody gets along, is going to be tested by circumstance. Eventually, only 8 or 9 guys are going to play. And some guys are going to be sitting who want to be playing. And I wonder at that point if the great chemistry is going to suffer a little bit.
It could, but I mean, the flip side of that is some of these guys who could end up sitting don't have the cachet to complain a whole lot. You know, I mean, Sean Williams was out of the league last year, and if Mike D'Antoni wasn't coaching the Lakers or coaching some other team, he wouldn't be in the league at all. I don't know if there's another coach in the league who would be able to convince an organization or would even want to convince an organization to take a chance on Sean Williams.
And I think right now, if you had to pick a guy who is working his way to the bench, it's him.
Absolutely.
He's been the least impressive of the bigs thus far.
That is one of the reasons that I brought him up, is because I anticipate that happening unless he picks up his play. Whatever happens with Wes Johnson or Xavier Henry, you know, depending on if they can maintain what they've done so far, which, like you said, has been kind of a surprise. Those guys don't have the cachet to complain too much. As far as the rotation working itself out, what I think is going to happen is, and this leads into Jordan Hill and trying to get him out there, I understand why D'Antoni is struggling to find minutes for Hill. It's in part because I think he is just naturally not enamored with Hill. I mean,
he's not the kind of player, doesn't have the skill set with the system that he wants to run that fits in a really perfect way. If Hill could, even, I'm not just talking three-pointers, if he could hit 18-footers consistently, 20-footers, right. It'd be different.
He doesn't have a reliable jumper. I mean, he just doesn't. And Sean Williams, at least on paper, fits the mold better for the way D'Antoni likes to play. But what I think is going to happen eventually is Wes Johnson's going to become the starting four alongside Powell. And then Hill's going to get those minutes that used to be Wes Johnson's and pair him with Kamen. And those are guys that give D'Antoni the spacing that he wants. Or he could decide to start Hill and just push Powell more to the outside, which has always been a problem. But frankly, Powell's, you know, about 15 to 20 feet a lot as it is playing right. The five. But either way, I think Williams is going to end up the odd man out.
It's just funny because we spent, and not we so much, but like, you know, Laker fans did nothing but complain about the short bench and this and that. And why doesn't he play this guy? Why doesn't he play this guy? Why doesn't he play this guy? And for, you know, I don't mean to be a D'Antoni apologist here, but the Lakers completely reconstructed their roster with a great deal of versatility, I would say, but, you know, as D'Antoni himself said, not necessarily a lot of guys who automatically distinguish themselves from the crowd. You have to play your way into these roles. They have a lot of similarities, a lot of redundancies, and, you know, they've played 4 games, and people are already killing them for not having a set rotation. I just think it's insane, given the roster that he has in front of him, the idea that you would know at this point who you want to play in and what combination seems absolutely bizarre.
Plus, on top of it, too, when you're trying to create, you know, a 10 or 11 man rotation, which everybody has wanted D'Antoni to do, to lengthen out the amount of guys who actually step on the court. So guys like Nash and Blake and Kobe and Powell came in, the older guys don't have too much wear and tear on their bodies over the course of a season. It is difficult to dole out minutes for that many players.
That's why coaches don't run 11-man rotations.
Sure, but I mean, but even trying to find something in the middle, it's difficult. Just because you run with a longer rotation doesn't mean more minutes get added to the game to offset that. It's still 12-minute quarters either way.
Right, I'm going to need 57 minutes tonight, guys, because I want to get Jordan Hill a few extra. You know, I know he says he's trying to get to it quickly, and he doesn't, you know, he wants a rotation. He wants guys to know their roles relatively quickly. But, you know, at some point, you know, and at some point he's going to need to get there. But give him, I honestly give him 10 games to figure this out. Give him 10 games to tinker around with stuff, because really ultimately what they're trying to find out is who might be useful going forward. It doesn't, I mean, they give away a couple games that a different or a tighter rotation might have allowed them to win. Who gives a shit? They're not going to win anything this year. It doesn't matter.
I completely agree.
Murray here, it just doesn't matter. So don't get wrapped up in it. Steve Nash, a lot of vitriol for Steve Nash, a lot of venom and frustration directed his way. Not off to a great start, played a little bit better against Atlanta than he did against San Antonio, but said, I believe it was either Monday or Tuesday, that he does have some nerve damage. He's still feeling all that, still trying to get back to where he wants to be. Andy, how confident are you that he can even kind of turn this thing around and look like sort of Steve Nash?
Not at all. I hate to say it, because Steve Nash has been one of my favorite players over the last, 15 or so years. And to the degree that I've gotten to know him since he's been with the Lakers, seems like one hell of a nice guy with a lot of character. You know, I think he's a really good dude who is trying to make the best of a bad situation. But the bottom line is he is recovering exceptionally slow from that injury, if you even want to call it recovering. And he's 39,
it's really more,
going
it's
on
more
four.
Of an adjustment. He's like, it's right. Like the river kind of flowing around it, not so much overcoming.
He looks every bit his age, and even worse, he doesn't seem confident about it. So there's really no reason for me to be more confident about this than Steve Nash seems to be. It doesn't seem like this is going to work out at all. I hate to say it.
Yeah, there are moments, I should say, not even nights. We've only played four games, and he hasn't been great in any of them. But there are obviously moments where he still looks good. The vision is obviously still there. He had the great, little layup inside against Atlanta where he doesn't put the second hand on the ball. All those really tricky little things that he does. And if you give him space, he can definitely exploit it with a pass or whatever. But, I asked a scout about this on Friday night, a different one, and kind of what's different about Nash now. He obviously has seen him play a lot of games. And he said one of the things is, that spot on the baseline. He used to drive that baseline almost like Gretzky behind the net and just destroy people from down there. Like this place that you're taught from the second day of basketball school, never dribble the ball down there. Don't go down there. That's not where you want to be handling the ball. And he would control games, and he doesn't get there anymore, and he knows that kind of stuff. I agree with you. But what I think is really kind of amazing about this, and what really has stuck out to me, Kobe is an obvious, Hall of Famer, one of the greatest players of all time, and the city could not be more invested in his recovery and every little thing and pulling for it and all this stuff. Nash, also a Hall of Famer and one of the great players of his generation, is getting killed. I mean, fans, it may not be, maybe it's just the most vocal ones, but at least if you go by our Twitter timeline, he's getting crushed. Fans want him to be gone. There's a huge component of people who just want the Nash era to end. And I just think that's kind of amazing. You have this guy who's, trying to end his career on his own terms, and because the city he's playing in doesn't have any equity in him, he doesn't have the they don't have the emotional attachment to him, he reminds them of the worst season in Lakers history. One of our Twitter followers noted, he reminds them of the most unpopular coach in recent Lakers history. And all this stuff, he's being shoved out the door. And I'm not blaming anyone, and I understand the dynamic, but it is kind of a fascinating dichotomy. You have two guys, two Hall of Famers, both trying to cheat time, getting an opposite reception from the fan base.
Well, look, man, Laker fans, and I am a Laker fan, and I root very hard in my personal life for this team. I've done it 20 plus years, but since Kobe really became Kobe, he is the only Laker who gets basically unconditional love from the fans who have bought in at any point. Obviously, there are fans who have never really been into Kobe in terms of the way he interacts with teammates or the way he can monopolize the ball.
But I think it's fair
shooter, that sort of thing.
The support is there.
Right, but the support has always been there. Everybody else, though, it comes and goes, and fans have been willing to drop. Look at the way Pau Gasol has gone in and out of fans' graces since he's been there. He's gone from being the savior to the GOAT to the reason they've won two titles to the guy that should have been Chris Paul, to the guy who's too soft and needs to put on his big boy pants, to the guy that everybody appreciates now because of how they saw Dwight Howard conduct himself, to the guy that now everybody's wondering, well, I wonder what we could get for him in trade. I mean, this is the way Pau is yo-yoed up and down. And Pau Gasol is both a great player and as good a person as you're going to encounter in any walk
of
life. And
a two-time title winner with the Lakers. He doesn't even have, you know, he has equity in this city.
Yes.
And
yes, he does.
Yeah, it's an excellent. I had not thought of that. Honestly,
I mean, he is the guy. He is Kobe's best friend, unless he's killing him. He's the guy Kobe loves, unless he's throwing him under the bus. I mean, even Kobe does it. I learned it from you, Dad. This is where the fans learned it.
Right. I don't like telling fans what to do or how to be a fan and all that kind of stuff. I would encourage people to lay off Nash. Because, I mean, look, he is not part of the future. We all know that. I'd be surprised if he was on the team next year.
No, he's definitely not part of the future, yeah. Brian. He's 40.
You know, this era is, the Steve Nash era, which was supposed to include Dwight and re-sign and all that, and be 3 years of a championship window, is obviously not going to work out that way. But he is so good and is such a good, at the very least, root for him to play, to get back to for 30 games of himself, so he, because I think if he can't do it, he's not going to steal money from someone next year. I think he'll retire. Let him try. Let him go out on his own terms. Wouldn't that be great? Just, it would be so much better if he could leave the game having left a good impression rather than this. I don't think he'll get a chance, but why you would cheer for anything, why you would want anything else is kind of beyond
me. Or, you know what, just be a mercenary fan and root for him to regain form so he can be tantalizing enough for the Raptors to give up something decent for him in a trade. I mean, Right. Really, think about it on those terms. You want him to recover and you want to encourage that recovery so you could get the most for him when he's out the door.
What would Rob Ford give up for Steve Nash at the trade deadline? How about some crack?
Rob Ford.
That was
the worst.
That was the worst, like, bad late night talk show monologue joke ever. I bet if Rob Ford were the GM of the Raptors, he would give up some crack for Steve Nash.
No, he wouldn't. He would actually trade his players for crack. He's not sending crack out the door. Guy likes crack.
He wouldn't trade him for crack. Something like that. Pardon me while I fire off this email to the Conan O'Brien show. Please hold on one moment, podcast fans, while I take care of a small piece of business. Anyway, one last thing, Andy, before we get to Ask a Kamenetsky.
Ack!
Looking ahead to Wednesday night. It's Wednesday or Thursday?
Thursday.
The Thursday night visit for the Lakers to Houston, where Dwight Howard now plays.
I heard about that.
No, he's on the team. Interesting news this week. Dwight Howard was asked ahead of the Clipper game on Monday if he still talks to Kobe Bryant. He was at, are you excited? You're in town. The Lakers are coming to town. Who are you going to talk to? I'm friends with Bobby Sacre and my friend Jody Meeks and Jordan Hill. I'm going to talk to those guys. Somebody said, are you going to talk to Kobe? He said, no.
Asked, do you still talk to Kobe? No. My first thought being, still? when do they used to get together like two women at the sewing circle? I don't remember those
there
two
may have been
blabbing
like,
it up.
Like Rob Ford smoking crack. He may have talked to Kobe once, but he was probably too drunk to remember what happened.
Now that's a good
joke,
Brian.
Hold on. Now
that's
really,
well done.
Now I am going to send a note off to Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, the idea that Dwight and Kobe, what reason would they possibly have to maintain contact once Dwight was out the door? They barely talked as teammates.
I have friends.
I mean, they didn't hate each other necessarily.
I mean, we have friends, there are a lot of the same friends we hang out with. We go months without talking to these people that we love, that we've invited to our weddings and all these other things. I go months without talking. I like those people.
Right.
Why? No, I mean, I'm not reaching out to the ones that I don't.
Yeah, the only and it's funny too because you know the next time reporters are around Kobe, because I don't know how often he always travels on the road with the team and he doesn't always make himself available during this period where he's injured, but somebody is going to ask Kobe his reaction to Dwight saying that they don't talk anymore. And I was thinking, like, the takeaway for Kobe, I think the lesson what he's thinking about in his head is, this is what I get for letting people come to my house. This is what happens when I let teammates go enter my home. This is what I get. I'm never doing it again. It's just not worth it.
Sorry, Derek Fisher. I was right. I was right. I was right not to let you into my house.
That lets you know just how bizarre last season was. Dwight actually visited Kobe's home.
Right.
Derek Fisher, we're not sure has.
Not unless it's happened since then.
And these are two guys that don't really talk.
Amazing. But have you spoken to Kobe? No. I give Dwight credit for not being like fucking insane. Of course not. Anyway, so it will be interesting. Real quick, do you think Dwight will play well on Wednesday night or Thursday night?
Yeah, I actually think he will play well. He showed, I thought at least, some jitters going back to Staples Center to play the Clippers. And
three fouls in 48 seconds or whatever it was.
It was amazing, too, how Clipper fans were giving Dwight.
What did you think about that? That Clipper fans were booing him like that? You would think Clipper fans would be cheering him for leaving the Lakers. Like, good job, man.
Well, I mean, there may have been some who felt like, remember, there were some talks that Chris Paul and Dwight Howard were going to engineer a way to get Dwight over to the Clippers. And naturally, those people are going to blame Dwight Howard for it falling through, no matter what the actual reason was. I just thought it was amazing the way Dwight managed to build up so much animosity for himself in this city that he has bonded Lakers and Clipper fans in their distaste for him. As I tweeted out, he's the basketball version of the 405.
Everyone hates him.
Everybody hates the 405. Everybody hates Dwight.
Yeah, I mean, your Clipper fans are Angelinos first. And I think they just think he's douchey. Everybody else does.
They're not into watching.
Do you know how douchey people think Dwight Howard is? Rob Ford wouldn't smoke crack with him.
not even if Howard bought it for him.
That's right. Anyway, I'm just going to keep trying different versions of the
I like
Ford
free
joke.
Crack as much as the next guy, but there's limits even for me.
No, sir. I will not smoke crack with you. All right. That's the big news for this week, which means, Andy, it's time for
crack.
That was clever. I like that. All right, it's Ask a Kamenetsky. You send us questions on Twitter. You send us questions on Facebook. We answer them. We'll blow through three or four of these, starting with Ahima, at Ahima, our friend Ahima Osazua. Cam Brothers, if you could spend a day with a former or current NBA player, who would you pick and why? Andy?
Well, I thought if he were in the mood to do this, Kobe would be fascinating, except I don't want to bank on him being in the mood for something like that. Plus, too, if we decide to go out, I think being out with Kobe would be an absolute pain in the ass, so I don't want that.
Fascinating for about an hour, but after that.
Right. I'm going to choose George Karl, because I think George Karl, A, he's a guy that loves him some beer. He likes red wine, which are two of my favorite things. I could probably talk him into having maybe a bourbon neat, which, as you know, I occasionally partake in. He's a very chill guy. He's funny as hell. He has great, amazing stories that he will often tell on the record, even when occasionally I think he shouldn't be telling on the record. Right. He's an interesting guy. He's opinionated. He's very candid. And what's very important, too, for spending a whole day with him, he goes at my speed. I don't know if I can keep up with many active players who are part of the NBA lifestyle. I'm a little too old, man. I don't know if I can do that anymore.
I think
anymore.
You're getting to an important aspect of this question. You really have two ways to
ask it.
You can go with the star player, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, or whatever, or you take, but then you get the good and the bad. You get the potential of, the guy shutting down or just kind of talking about himself, pumping himself up and all that. Or you take the guy who played with all those guys and can tell all the real stories and whatever. Sort of the Zelligs of the NBA. So
sure.
I'm thinking like Robert Horry, a guy like that. He's very fat. He did not play in the NBA. Somebody like that who could tell stories about great Rockets teams, about great, you know, good rock, you know, Rockets teams, played a lot of guys over there, played with great players with the Lakers, played with great players with the Spurs, you know, and he's a good guy. And so he could
throw a towel at Danny Ainge.
Right. Somebody like that, I think, would be good. So I'm going to say Robert Horry.
That's a very good choice. If nothing else, we've had conversations with Horry. He's a lot of fun to talk to.
Yes, he is.
From Blue Man at TQT008, worst popular TV show. My thoughts, Big Bang Theory. Who watches it?
This is a little tough. It's a good question. It's a little tough because, you know, by definition, if you don't find them entertaining, you don't watch. So small sample size, maybe you pick a show that you thought sucked that first time you watch them and turns out it's okay. I don't watch it regularly, but it, like on TBS where they show those Big Bang Theory reruns, I've laughed at the Big Bang Theory. Not proud of it, but I have. I've never understood really the appeal of The New Girl. Like, I watched it once or twice. I didn't really get it. I didn't think it was that funny. I didn't think Zooey Deschanel was, like, all adorable and cute. I mean, it was like, you know, stop asking Siri if it's raining kind of stuff. And I don't get it. People love that show, but I don't get it.
I'm going with Blue Man on this. I don't get the Big Bang Theory at all. I've never watched an entire episode of it because I can't ever get through it whenever I've attempted. I find it aggressively unfunny. It's these lazy stereotypes of geeks. It's like watching bad high school plays of actors playing nerds. Like, it's mystifying to me that Jim Parsons has 11 billion Emmys for this role.
That I get. I'm not saying I think it's that good. I can sit through it doesn't mean I think the man deserves that much praise.
I don't mean to make too big a thing out of this, but the fact that you've said you find the show watchable kind of makes you dead to me. And
I'm going to work for Conan O'Brien anyway. All right, next question. At Colerette tweets at Cam Brothers, Richie Incognito, asshole or asshole?
I'm going asshole. I'm going all asshole, caps. All caps. That guy is an asshole, and we knew that about him before he ended up in this mess with the Dolphins. The guy was an asshole in college, and he was an asshole with the Rams, which is a big reason why he's not with the Rams anymore.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, granted, a lot of people thought Steve Spagnuolo was a terrible coach, but I mean, I get why the guy has a job. In professional sports, scarcity and talent, you know, are trump everything. I mean, if all assholes didn't have jobs in professional sports, there would be more job openings. I think that's something we all understand. What I don't understand is how, given everything he's been through and his track record, he was on this 6-member leadership council for the... How the hell does that happen? I mean, who's voting? Is this one of those, like, off-year primaries where, like, 19 people in the county come and vote? And some yahoo ends up, you know, your county commissioner because he won, like, 6-4?
Or it is a scathing indictment of the leadership inside the Dolphins locker room where they were like, well, Incognito's kind of an asshole, but look at these other guys, man. He's part of top six.
It's surprising, but he has a very strong platform. I very much agree on his policy for training tables and post-practice massages.
Yeah, this is a real mess for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, in all seriousness, it's an incredible situation in sports. And, I mean, bullying is a weird word, and that's the word people have been using because it is so associated, Andy, with kids and things like
teenagers.
That. Right, teenagers. When you get older, you think about these things as, like, workplace environment questions.
I wish
whatever.
It had been phrased as harassment.
Right.
Because then, if nothing else, I think it might have been taken, I don't want to say seriously, because it's clearly being taken seriously, but in terms of the way people are discussing this, I think the conversation might be framed a little differently, because like you said, bullying makes you often think of a weak kid being picked on by a bunch of, you know, stronger, bigger kids,
Martin is capable of dealing with it. He's, you know, a grown man. He just chooses not to. He said, I'm not working under these conditions.
Right, and by the way, too, that's the decision that he should have made. I mean, there's going to be more information that comes out in terms of how much the Dolphins knew about this. I've heard conflicting reports that they really weren't aware of this, and also that they were high. Well, I've also heard that they were highly aware of it, and that, you know, you hear teammates being interviewed about saying they never really realized that it got bad. Turns out, at least from some reports, they were aware. But either way, this notion that Jonathan Martin should have handled this on his own, code being should have challenged Incognito to a fight, is ridiculous.
But it's, you know, this is sort of these last vestiges of really the worst parts of classic macho jock culture. Like, hazing is stupid. It is. It's stupid in fraternities. It's stupid in team sports. And, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, the Dodgers making the rookies dress up on the final road trip of the year, and Yasiel Puig is wearing his backpack dressed as Gumby. Stuff like that. I mean, those actually can be legitimate team-building things. Making the rookies in training camp sing at the training table. That's harmless stuff.
After Lakers practices, you'll see, you know, Elias Harris gathering up all the Gatorade bottles, because that's what rookies do.
Like that. I mean,
Ryan Kelly, same
thing. That's harmless stuff. And I can even kind of understand, you know what, one time the rookies are going to take the veterans out for a meal. Now, that meal shouldn't be $30,000, like some reports said that some of these tabs are $15K or whatever it is. But, you know, if you make guys split a $2,000 check and it's five or six guys, and that one of them should be able to, you know, tap a guy on the shoulder and be like, look, man, I know I'm getting paid, I know I'm a pro, but I can't do this. And that team leader should then quietly, without saying anybody, slip that guy a check to reimburse, whatever it is. There are ways that you can do these things in harmless ways that keep guys from getting too puffed up, that'll make them, you know, give some, you know, what's the right word, respect or whatever it is to veterans and so on. But the shit that they're talking about with these is so far beyond that. And in general, real hazing of professional athletes, grown men, is so stupid and counterproductive, because it doesn't help teams win when you grind guys into a pulp. You know, the Dolphins are not a better team now than they were 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, because their, you know, starting member of their offensive line is gone.
Yeah, and in the meantime, too, beyond just hazing, Richie Incognito sending, you know, these text messages to Jonathan Martin, you know, dropping the N-bomb, saying that he's going to go after his family and stuff like that.
Half N-bomb. What the hell is this stuff?
Right. I mean, that's beyond bullying.
Right.
And it's beyond, you know, it would be harassment.
Classic hazing. That's
right.
Harassment.
And it's beyond anything that Martin, who, by the way, isn't a rookie anymore, but apparently this is something that stemmed back to his rookie season, and basically Incognito hasn't been willing to let go. This is something that the organization should be handling, and it's not something that Jonathan Martin should have to put himself in the position of getting into a fist fight and possibly facing team disciplinary action, or possibly alienating himself from teammates over this. If this is happening in any type of workplace, the person doing it is getting fired, and you don't go fist fighting over it. You go to a superior.
Right.
I mean, Martin handled this correctly.
Hopefully, this will, you know, the best teams. I heard Troy Polamalu today on with Colin Cowher on ESPN Radio, and he said, we don't do this stuff. You know, we treat our rookies. We rib them periodically, but we don't treat them disrespectfully. We don't make them do onerous, like truly onerous things. Shell out $15,000 for a trip to Vegas that guy's not even going on. Like, really serious things. Like, these are guys who are here to help our team, help our program, help our franchise. We treat them well. We nurture them. You know, I mean, it's like, hopefully that's what this leads to. People examining practices and saying they're stupid, and that's the end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Final act for us comes from our Facebook page, Brian. It's Kamenetsky Brothers Facebook page, from Trav Smith. Xavier Henry had to get a handful of stitches in Friday's game against the Spurs. However, he said a car accident when he was younger was much worse. What is the worst injury either of you have sustained? The more graphic, the better.
I'll go quickly, because I know yours is worse than mine. I've actually not had that many.
That time I was in NAMM.
With Rob Ford smoking crack. I've most of my bad injuries are rugby injuries. I used to play rugby. I busted a nose. I popped an AC joint. I tore a thumb ligament. I once fractured my leg playing Little League, but it was like a little hairline fracture. The most painful thing, and it wasn't really disgusting. Broken nose is probably the ugliest thing I've ever had. Not to be confused with the nose that grew back, which is the second ugliest thing. people actually, this happened in college, and I had the thing, you know, when they reset it, and I had the thing on, and then they took it off, and like, oh my god, did you have a nose job? Yes, and I chose this one. Idiots. But anyway,
that's like, by the way, I mean, sort of a backhanded compliments. I remember in college.
What's wrong with you?
In college, I got into a skiing accident and I blew out my knee. And I had to spend the entire summer doing physical therapy after knee surgery to get myself, you know, strong again. And
back
I was
to an elite level.
Exactly. Back to an elite level.
Like Derrick Rose or Kobe Bryant.
Exactly. I wanted to get my explosiveness
hashtag
back.
Bear hunt. Hashtag blackout.
Yeah. And I mean, like Andrew Bynum, I was worried about getting my explosiveness back, and I didn't want to find myself in a position of doubting myself. But school was starting up again my senior year at SC, and I ran into a friend of mine that I hadn't talked to all summer, and she knew that I had had this skiing accident, that I'd been on crutches for like the last month and a half of school. And, you know, we're chit-chatting. She's like, what'd you do with your summer? And I was like, well, you know, it's kind of a drag. You know, mostly I had to spend the time doing rehab. And she looks at me, there's this like 3-second pause, and she goes, I am so proud of you for finally taking care of this. And I look at her and I go, for my knee? What did you think I was talking about? And she just turns beet red, and there's this flustered pause. She goes, I have to go.
I'm sorry, I thought you were the mayor of Toronto.
Wow, that's like bad. One of those
that's
moments.
That's much worse than somebody thinking I elected to have this nose put on me.
But that's really similar to how somebody revealed that they thought little of your nose. This friend of mine, and she was a friend, thought very little of me.
That is
clearly,
one, that is a revealing moment.
Yeah, it was uncomfortably revealing.
But anyway, the worst injury I ever had, I actually had the rib injury that Steve Blake had. Last year, you know, the rib thing where his cartilage popped.
Yes.
That I think I mentioned this last year, that he managed to play at all. Steve Blake is a tough mother effer. So
yes, he is.
Give it up for that. Anyway, your turn.
About 6 years ago, Brian, I went to see a friend of mine's band play at the Kibitz Room at Canner's on Fairfax. And I knew that I would be drinking while seeing my friend's band play. that's cute, Brian.
See what I did
Brian,
there?
Who's in charge of the music. Yeah, Brian's in charge of the music. That's it's clever, especially as I'm telling a story about drinking and past drinking. But on the way back from this concert and me being in a cab because I wanted to do the responsible thing to all the other drivers on the road and not be behind the wheel, a drunk driver T-boned our cab. And I ended up knocked out, like knocked unconscious, and I don't remember the accident at all. All I remember is coming to, and our cab was stuck in the middle of La Brea and Beverly, that intersection. And I'm just I'm groggy and coming out of this fog and just going, why are we stopped here? Why is the cab in the middle of La Brea and Beverly? And then I start feeling this stuff dripping down my face. And I just start saying, am I bleeding? Like, what is this? We in an accident?
It turned
no
out to be blood, as the case was.
Yeah, I had no idea what happened. My face likely hit the glass between me and the driver. My body as well. I got taken to Cedars. You had to pick me up, actually.
You were a mess.
And I had a shoulder injury with like some small tears that they thought was going to maybe require surgery, and a bruise over my whole shoulder. That was so bad, it went to a color I'd never seen before. Like, most bruises are, you know, purple, blue, even black. This was so deep, it actually turned green. I've never seen that before in my life. My face was all cut up and bruised. My nose as well, they had originally thought was broken. Turned out it wasn't. The driver, by the way, not just drunk, but driving on a suspended license with no insurance, and apparently, I was told this because I didn't witness it, I was unconscious, apparently tried to flee, but was so drunk he got about six steps before he got caught. The good news, though, about this accident, though, is it got me and my eventual wife back together again. We were broken up.
You back to health.
She did. Even though we were broken up, she felt very bad and helped nurse me back to health. And in that time hanging out together, we decided to give our relationship a go. We ended up getting married. And our dad, said at our wedding toast that he was grateful for this accident happening. And if he would have me go through it all over again, if it meant me and my wife together. My wife also says the exact same thing, although if she had to reverse it and she went through the accident, she'd find somebody else.
The part I really appreciated most about it is how when you were done 2 days out of the hospital, you tweeted #bearhunt, #blackout, and you were back out there doing what you do. So tough as nails, that Andy Kamenetsky. That's a sweet story.
I remember actually saying that I was going to go back, talking to you, because at the time you and I were covering the Dodgers for the LA Times, and saying, you know, I think in maybe like a day or so I can get back to covering the team. And you just, there was this pause, and you said, no, you won't.
Yeah, and you were on the DL for a couple weeks there.
Yeah, it took about 3 days before I could move.
Right. All right, so that's ACK for this week. That's really the podcast for this week, Andy. That's the whole thing. I think we covered a lot of ground. We have nothing to apologize for.
I mean, unlike
we
Rob Ford.
Spanned what?
Unlike Rob Ford.
Right. We spanned everything from Canadian politics to the Lakers and everything in between. So we apologize for nothing until next week's podcast, which we might apologize for in advance. See everybody next time.